Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the Pantograph for Friday, May 30th, 2025. Today I'm going to start with some state and local news, and in the second half I'll cover sports, obituaries, and any kind of extra news that I'm seeing here in the paper. The front page this morning has a large picture of former Governor Jim Edgar receiving congratulations after the dedication ceremony for the Jim Edgar Reading Room at the Illinois State Library in Springfield on Wednesday. And there's a nice story here about that, and I will begin with my first story. This story is by Michael Molson. It's a state of Lee newspapers, and the headline reads, "Former Governor Jim Edgar, nicknamed the Reader, gets fitting tribute in Springfield." Jim Edgar was an ardent supporter of libraries and literacy during his tenure in state government, so much so that his staff affectionately referred to him as the Reader. That support as both Secretary of State and Governor was celebrated Wednesday with the ceremony to dedicate the Illinois State Library's reading room in his name. "I think it's one of the most beautiful buildings of government in the state of Illinois," Edgar said during the ceremony. "Make use of this beautiful building." A Charleston native and Eastern Illinois University graduate, Edgar served two terms as a Republican representative in the Illinois House before becoming Secretary of State in 1981. Among his achievements in that office was overseeing construction of the Illinois State Library building that was dedicated in June 1990. In 1991, he was elected the state's 38th governor, a position he held until 1999. After leaving office, he served as a distinguished fellow at both the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs and at the Harvard Kennedy School Institute of Politics. He established the Edgar Speaker Series that brings state government experts to Eastern, his alma mater, and the Edgar Fellow Program at the University of Illinois, which provides training and networking opportunities to emerging leaders. Edgar has also remained active as an advisor and mentor to many in Illinois political circles, including several of the speakers at Wednesday's event. He publicly revealed in February that he's been battling pancreatic cancer. Throughout many of his years of public service, Governor Edgar was a champion of Illinois' library system and literacy programs, and he took immense pride in our state's rich literary heritage, said U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, a Democrat from Springfield. "I can't think of a better way to celebrate his legacy than by dedicating a reading room in the library he helped build." The reading room houses a collection of works by notable Illinois authors, many of them first editions. The space is used for public meetings hosted by nonprofits and government entities and is also open to the public. Among the collection are books by former President Barack Obama and the Wizard of Oz series by L. Frank Baum. "His true passion is what is why we're all here today," Secretary of State Alexei Giannoulia said. "He was a champion and an advocate of all our libraries being represented, recognizing the fundamental role they play every day in educating our youth and inspiring them to achieve every dream they could imagine." As Secretary of State, Edgar launched several initiatives to support literacy, including the Read Illinois program in 1981, which promoted the work of Illinois authors through reading lists, author conferences, and a literary map highlighting authors' hometowns. Writers such as Ernest Hemingway, Upton Sinclair, and Edna Ferber were featured as part of the initiative. He also spearheaded the creation of IlliniNet Online, a circulation system that by the mid-1980s allowed Illinois residents to search and borrow more than 18 million books, periodicals, videos, and films from libraries across the state. In 1984, Edgar directed the state library to begin offering grants to support local literacy programs. The following year, the General Assembly approved $2 million to fund the effort, helping position Illinois as a national leader in combating adult illiteracy. We could fill an entire section of this library with ways that Edgar has improved the state of Illinois, Governor J.B. Pritzker said during the ceremony. You can talk about his leadership during times of crisis and hardship, or the number of jobs that he created while he was in office. The record really is endless. Pritzker went on to share an anecdote that he said summarized Edgar's most enduring contribution. When Edgar was first elected Secretary of State, he broke with tradition and kept many of the employees who had been hired by his Democratic predecessor. To his Republican colleagues who expressed surprise or consternation about the decision, Edgar reportedly responded, "To me, the best politics is good government. If you do your job well, then it's going to reflect well on me, and that's the best politics there is." Good government is good politics, and good politics is good government, Pritzker said. You don't really hear that enough anymore, do you? But that view, that honest loyalty to the people of Illinois, is what makes Jim Edgar an icon, no matter what party you belong to. Moving on the front page, we have a story running down the right side of the front page of the paper with the headline, Bloomington Normal Mental Health Providers Advocate for Education, Open Conversations About Self-Harm. And this is by Caitlin Klebeck. When it comes to self-harm, local mental health professionals say there is not always one reason for why a person may consider hurting themselves. Instead, behavioral health professionals suggest that reasoning can stem from a multitude of causes, such as losing a job, past trauma, loss of a loved one or more, but noted that these are not the only driving factors, and suicides are not caused by a single event. It's a matter of things happening over and over and over again to the point where they don't feel there's another way out, said Joan Hartman, CEO at the Center for Human Services in Bloomington. In 2022, suicides in Illinois peaked with 1,548 people dying by suicide, the highest number seen in decades, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health. 16 of those deaths by suicide in 2022 were by McLean County residents, but the county saw its own peak in 2021 with 29 deaths by suicide. IDPH also reports the suicide rate has increased by 27.2% over the past 20 years. No additional data about suicides by year has been made publicly available since 2022. IDPH data shows suicide as the 11th leading cause of death in Illinois, resulting in over 1,000 deaths statewide each year. And for young people ages 10 to 24 in Illinois, suicide is the third leading cause of death, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports. Suicides outnumbered homicides in the U.S. from 2011 to 2020, according to the Suicide Prevention Resource Center. Although statistics show Illinois' suicide rates have steadily increased, the state ranks among the lowest rates in the nation, according to CDC data. Montana, Alaska, and Wyoming rank among the highest, while New Jersey, New York, and Massachusetts are among the lowest. McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder did not respond to requests for comment on this subject. PATH, or Providing Access to Help, mans the 211 call center and the 988 call center for over 50 counties in Illinois. The 211 service is available 24/7 by calling or texting the numbers 211 and can provide referrals for counseling, food, emergency shelter, rent and utility assistance, health care, or support groups through the Center for Human Services. The 988 call center, also available 24/7 by calling or texting the numbers 988, is designed to provide life-saving crisis intervention for those battling suicidal thoughts or ideation. Through this service, individuals can be considered to or can be connected to counselors for emotional support, safety planning, and in-person intervention. PATH retained the 988 service from the National Suicide Prevention Hotline and serves nine counties in central Illinois. PATH answers calls during the busiest times, 4 p.m. to midnight, to help support the statewide call center. From May 1st, 2024 through April 30th of this year, PATH answered 14,094 calls and made 752 referrals specifically to mental health services as a result of individuals using 988. Come July 1st, PATH will no longer be the outsource for the 211 call center, but 211 services will still be available through another service. PATH will continue to handle 988 calls. Once connected through 988, the Center for Human Services Mobile Crisis Team comes in, providing a short screening appointment before suggesting additional services. The CHS provides outpatient and outreach services, as well as a 24-hour crisis team. In 2024, the CHS saw 1,507 unduplicated clients for crisis evaluations, but didn't have numbers specific to patients with suicidal thoughts. PATH identified Illinois was well into the 90% range for de-escalating calls before they had to be handled by other first responders. When we can de-escalate and stabilize someone on the phone, that means that person is not having to go to an emergency room, which may exacerbate suicidal ideation, said Adam Carter, CEO of PATH, who holds a PhD in mental health counseling. Hartman agreed, saying, "An emergency room can be pretty traumatic." Instead, she believes CHS's behavioral health urgent care facility may be a more beneficial resource for those needing mental health care. When they walk in, they're greeted by somebody with lived experience who has walked the path the person is on and will talk with them and help them develop a plan for their crisis to help alleviate their symptoms, Hartman said. Within this crisis center, Carter said local resources offer a triad of services, identifying somewhere to call, somewhere to go, and someone to go to. The Behavioral Health Urgent Care Facility at 520 North Center Street in Bloomington is staffed with a clinician and open 9 a.m. to 1 a.m. Sunday through Friday and 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Saturday at no cost. To reach the Behavioral Health Urgent Care Tower Center, call 309-827-5351. Carter, who has worked with children for 20 years as a family and child counselor, noted many young people are texting 988 rather than calling. Starting July 1st, PATH will be answering 988 text chats 24/7 for the entire state. If we're gearing younger, then we have an opportunity to be able to provide 988 services to younger folks, Carter said. Dr. Burgundy Johnson, child psychiatrist at the Carl Broman Outpatient Center in Bloomington, said, "Suicide is a leading cause of death in children, which is horrible. For children 10 and above, suicide has been in the top one or two for quite a long time." Johnson, who works remotely out of Iowa, is the physician lead for child psychiatry at Carl's Outpatient Center at 3024 East Empire Street. She started working there about 3 years ago with the start of the child psychiatry program. "There was therapy, but there was no child psychiatry," Johnson said. "Now there are three child psychiatrists at Carl and one child nurse practitioner." The children are in an area that's oftentimes overlooked. It's an area where we do not develop specialized programs, even in the world of counseling, Carter said. According to the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, there are only about 10,500 child psychiatrists in the U.S., with a shortage in nearly every state. The AACAP map shows 367 child psychiatrists in Illinois, with only one in McLean County and none in the surrounding counties of Livingston, Ford, Woodford, DeWitt, Tazewell, Logan, or Piatt. Johnson said her major goals are providing access to care and collaborative care while destigmatizing talking about child psychiatry through community integration. "Nobody wants the pediatrician to be like, 'I think they need to see someone more.' It's not a good feeling usually, even if they know the child needs the help. So reducing that stigma and improving psychoeducation would be a goal," Johnson said. In response to improving psychoeducation for children, Carter has worked extensively on creating counseling theories and techniques designed specifically for children. Right now, PATH is creating a puppet program that they plan to take to schools to help talk with children about safety planning and coping skills. Our materials talk about the things that would happen if they call 988, teaching about the parts of a safety plan, Carter said. The scripts have been read and proofed by trauma specialists and seen in front of school administrators nationwide. This summer, Carter and his team plan to have the puppet plays available for caregivers to come and see the show, providing feedback before PATH takes the shows to children. For people worried that someone they know may hurt themselves, professionals suggest trying the QPR method, which stands for question, persuade, and refer. Don't be afraid to ask, are you okay? Are you thinking about something? We don't want to phrase it negatively, but we can say, hey, are you having thoughts of wanting to die? Johnson said. After questioning, try persuading the individual to talk about what they're experiencing and feeling, then referring them to additional help, such as behavioral health specialist or psychiatrist. I think it's really important for people to educate themselves, and it's easy to educate yourself on what to look for and how to respond, Hartman said. Our last story on the front page is a column, The Cutting Board, by D. Jack Alkire. And this one focused on jam. It looks like strawberries. And the headline reads, Find Your Jam with Strawberries. And I'll begin here. Have you ever tried to bottle a feeling, to boil down and condense a collection of life's fleeting moments into a tincture so you can keep it, treasure it, share it? Good food can do that. I remember a piece of taco sushi or octopus from Yumu's Asian cuisine a few years ago that transported me back to the ocean. I don't know if I've ever made something that can break the laws of space-time, but we're going to keep trying. So please join me this week as we jam out with some strawberries and make, well, jam. Andrew Zaman grows his June-bearing strawberries at Zaman Farms in Moroa and sells them at the downtown Bloomington Farmers Market. But they sell out quickly, so you'll want to get there early to snag a quart for $7 or a container of 8 quarts, that's 2 gallons, for $50. Strawberries are notorious for growing runners or stringers, offshoots of the main plant that grow their own roots. Every spring, I'll come in and snip the runners, so these are all the mother plants, and this way you have these nice even rows, Zaman said. His strawberries grow close together, so the berries are a little bit smaller. They're super sweet, way better than anything you would find in the grocery store, he said. I bought 2 quarts, one for eating and one for jamming. One thing needed for most any jam, jelly, or preserve is something called fruit pectin, a naturally occurring gelling agent found in plants. It's sold in powder or liquid forms in most grocery stores. Now, I'd never made jam before, and I thought it wouldn't be that complicated, but I figured I'd ask one of the many jam sellers at the market, Candace Dodson. You want the fresh fruit. You're going to need lemon juice for the strawberries to acidify them, she said, and then you need a bunch of sugar. Uh-oh. If you're new here, that five-letter word is kind of like a four-letter word in my kitchen. See, like millions of Americans, I have type 2 diabetes, so I can't have a bunch of sugar. Dodson sells jellies and jams that have no sugar added, but she uses alternate sweeteners like Splenda. However, I didn't want to overshadow the flavor of the strawberries, so I set out to find a process that didn't require sugar. As with all prevention or preservation methods, I recommend finding a local university extension like the University of Illinois Extension, as they have helpful safety guides for just about everything. In my research, I found the University of Tennessee Institute of Agriculture Extension had this nifty write-up, and he gives a link there. In it, William C. Morris, Associate Professor of Food Science and Technology, explains the importance of sugar and what products to use if you're avoiding it. Sugar helps prevent spoilage, but it also helps to gel up the jams or jellies. He includes a recipe for sparkling strawberry jam that uses gelatin instead of fruit pectin, but he also included a list of trusted pectin products for a no-sugar jam. And I found one. Sure Gel Premium Fruit Pectin at several local grocery stores that specifically reads in a blue label for use in less or no sugar needed recipes. This recipe called for 3 cups mashed fruit, 3/4 cup water, and the whole package of pectin. Following Shergel's instructions, I cleaned the strawberries and cut off the stems. Then, with the help of my niece, Corey Philman, we mashed them to release their juices. Now, the cool thing about strawberries is that they're not botanically berries, unlike watermelon, which is botanically a berry. Instead, strawberries are an aggregate accessory fruit, meaning each little seed on the strawberry is attached to fruit. Neat. As we were mashing the strawberries, we could see the individual fruit pieces coming apart. Then we measured the mashed fruit, added the recommended water to the mixture, and poured it into a stock pot. We slowly added the pectin powder until it was dissolved. Then, because I don't like following the rules, I added the juice of half of a lemon, no seeds. I reduced that a bit, and stirring constantly brought it to a rolling boil, a boil that doesn't stop when stirred, and let it boil for 60 seconds. Once it was done, I took some clean mason jars that were warmed up and ladled the mixture into them. Important note, I did not process these to be preserved. I only had 3 cups of jam, and I didn't want to go through the hassle of water canning for 2 small jars. So this is a fresh jam that must stay refrigerated and is not shelf stable. Something new we're going to try this year, which actually started in February with our cupcake edition, is getting the newsroom's thoughts on our creations. So, per editor Allison Petty's suggestion, I brought the strawberry jam to the office for a taste test. Caitlin Klepek said this would be good on French toast, which I have no doubt that it would. Matthias Janik said this would be a good cheesecake topping or go well with kolaczki, the popular Polish dessert. Kelsey Watznauer rather astutely pointed out that, yes, jam has a thick consistency. But I appreciate how Olivia Jacobs just said, it tastes like summer. And that is the end of that column. I'm going to move on to the second page, which has a long story here on a State House-focused story on the Racino. With the headline, Decatur Racino Bill clears starting gate but may not reach this week's finish line. And this is by Brendan Moore. Legislation that would authorize a racetrack and casino in Decatur has cleared the starting gate, but continued opposition from a key player in the gaming industry could keep it from reaching the finish line before lawmakers wrap up their spring legislative session later this week. Senate Bill 1473, sponsored by Senator Patrick Joyce, a Democrat from Essex, passed unanimously out of the Senate Executive Committee on Wednesday. However, some members would not commit to supporting the legislation on the floor amid a dispute between the bill's proponents and Hawthorne Racecourse in suburban Chicago. The friction could effectively punt the issue to later this year, a delay that could push back a privately funded $150 million project indicator that proponents say is shovel-ready. And it could further imperil the state's horse racing industry, which has taken a beating in recent years due to factors that included competition from neighboring states and closure of marquee racetracks like Arlington Park. We're running out of time, Joyce said. There's a lot of people depending on this legislation and trying to make career decisions. The legislation would direct the Illinois Racing Board to award a horse racing license to a track in Macon County. This would clear the path for Virginia-based Revolutionary Racing to develop a 200-acre parcel at the northwest corner of U.S. 36 and Wickles Road into a 1-mile harness racetrack that would include a casino with 900 gaming positions. The bill would also increase the amount of off-track betting locations that are permitted to FanDuel Sportsbook and Horse Racing in Collinsville, previously known as Fairmount Park, from 9 to 18. It would also prohibit a racetrack from operating within 100 miles of their facility. Included in an amendment to legislation earlier this month, these provisions removed opposition from the track's owners, Accel Entertainment. But the bill also adds a sunset clause to a provision in the state's massive 2019 gaming expansion that allowed Hawthorne to veto any proposed project within 35 miles of its existing track in Stickney. The 2019 law, which also authorized 6 additional brick-and-mortar casinos, legalized sports betting and expanded video gaming, allowed racetracks to operate slots and table games at facilities known as racinos. It also added a new racing license for South Suburban Cook County. Since the new license falls within the 35-mile radius of Hawthorne, the track has essentially had the exclusive right to develop a new harness racetrack in suburban Chicago, but 6 years later, their efforts have not borne fruit. Hawthorne has yet to break ground on a racino at its existing site, nor has its ownership made progress on a second racing location. With Arlington Park's closure in 2021, the only racino to this point that has opened in Illinois is at the Collinsville track. Under the proposed legislation, Hawthorne would lose what has effectively been a monopoly on racing in the south suburbs at the end of this year. After that time, the racing license would be open to anyone. The Illinois Harness Horsemen's Association, one of the major backers of the bill being considered, says that Hawthorne has had long enough. I want to be really clear. What this bill does not take away Hawthorne's ability to open a casino at their own location or in the southwest suburbs, said Jeff Davis, president of the association. All it does is removes the guarantee that they get to do so in the southwest suburbs. The shot clock is ticking, and it's time for action, Davis said. Hawthorne is the only racetrack in the state that still has dates for harness racing, but the events are often relegated to less appealing slots than those of thoroughbreds. This has effectively put the state's harness racing industry at the mercy of the more than century-old family-owned racetrack. The track has strong allies in the legislature. Previous efforts to remove its veto power have been thwarted, but the longer they take, the more patience is wearing thin. How long should we give you? 10 years? 20 years? 30 years? Asked Senate President Don Harmon, a Democrat from Oak Park. Jim Stumpf, a lobbyist for Hawthorne, acknowledged that the track has had difficulties in arranging financing for a racino at its existing track and a new one in Cook County, but he added that they intend to continue to pursue the South Suburban track and casino. We appreciate the perseverance that you've given us so far, Stumpf said. We continue to try to get this thing operating to provide benefits to the horsemen, to the track, and also to the state of Illinois. We regret that we've not been able to move quicker. I think perhaps the perseverance is wearing out, Harmon responded. Still, some lawmakers indicated that amid the dispute, they would not support the legislation as is if it came to the Senate floor for a vote. I love the sponsor, but I don't love the bill, said State Senator Dave Kohler, a Democrat from Peoria, who asked Joyce to continue to work with the opposition and come to a resolution. Joyce, not explicitly committing to hold the bill, suggested that the next move would be steered by continued conversations over the next couple days. Stumpf said that the Hawthorne is not opposed to a new track and casino in Decatur, but he said that along with the removal of the 35-mile veto, they took issue with the inclusion of a 100-mile exclusion zone for the Collinsville track and the potential for competition from off-track betting organizations affiliated with the new Decatur track. What we think we need to do is, instead of rushing to eliminate this 35-mile area for Hawthorne, is we need to have something of reciprocal value and consideration in discussions with Hawthorne and the horsemen and the proponents of the bill, Stumpf said. Proponents, including Revolutionary Racing and the Illinois Harness Horsemen's Association, have been pushing the legislation hard. The Decatur Project also has the support of a collection of trade unions, including the AFL-CIO, the Decatur Building and Construction Trades Council, and the Central Illinois Buildings and Construction Trades Council. A project labor agreement has already been signed, according to officials. Nicole Bateman, the president and CEO of the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, testified in support of the bill on Wednesday, saying it was an opportunity for the region to become a tourism destination and to diversify beyond its manufacturing roots. It's not often in my world that an economic development project as robust as this one chooses Central Illinois, Bateman said. This can be a trailblazing win for the entire state. Officials say the project could attract 1,000 additional visitors to Macon County per day, create 300 permanent jobs, and generate as much as $27 million in state and local taxes. In addition to the racetrack with a grandstand and a casino, the project could include a sports complex, hotels, restaurants, and a training center. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf sent Governor J.B. Pritzker a letter earlier this month urging him to support the legislation. "I don't have a position on the bill that's being debated," Pritzker told reporters on Wednesday, though adding that his administration had been working very hard to bring jobs to Decatur. I'm going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for Friday, May 30th, 2025. Please stay tuned.